Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
It's Giles Brown.
How to think about AI, a guide for the perplexed, revealing the unfolding story of artificial intelligence. Richard Susskind presents a short, non-technical guide that challenges us to think differently about AI. I am delighted to say that I'm joined live on the line by the author of How to Think About AI, Richard Susskind. Well, I think it is, but he may just be an AI-generated bot. But let's have a look, shall we? Richard, good morning to you.
Good morning. Still a human at this end.
It's Monday morning. I'm only on my third coffee, so I'll get back to you on this end as well. What's your background before we get into the nuts and bolts of AI?
Interesting mix. I'm half a lawyer and half a technologist. But in the mid-80s, I did my PhD at Oxford on AI and law. So I spent most of my life thinking about how AI might impact humanity, civilization. And over the last few years, there's been some remarkable advances. And so it seemed to me it'd be useful to try and bring them together in some kind of palatable, non-technical form so that everyone can try and understand what's going on.
Well, you say AI, I mean, this is a futurologist's dream, isn't it? Because you say AI and law, there have been, even in the past 5 years, a lot of people, you know, saying the legal implications of AI, deep fakes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's true. My interest is not only that, but also in how we might use AI to increase, for example, access to justice. Around the world, it's impossible for most people to understand and assert and enforce their own legal rights. And so I'm interested in the idea of systems that can help guide people on legal questions and perhaps even resolve their disputes. But about 10 years ago, I went far wider, really. I co-authored a book with my son Daniel, an economist, called The Future of the Professions. And what we did then was to explore the impact of AI on health and education, on architecture and other areas too. And that's really led me to think more deeply and more widely about what AI means for us as humans.
Because the thing is, whenever you mention AI to the layman, and you are looking at one now, immediately, you cannot get a tabloid headline without mentioning AI. And here we go, and let's get the 300-pound metallic Arnold Schwarzenegger out of the room. They immediately put a picture of Terminator up, and I said, "That's the future of AI. You know, killer chatbots, etc." I mean, how much of an understanding do we have? I mean, talk about the guide to the perplexed, but how much of an understanding do you think that we as lay people have of the benefits of AI, rather than the technical bogeyman that seems to be the pervasive sort of perspective of AI?
It's such a key question. I think we have to allow ourselves to have two thoughts in our minds. One, that this is an amazing technology, can bring remarkable benefits. And secondly, it does bring a mountain range of risks too. But you don't need to be team AI or not against team AI. It's very polarizing. Whereas what I want people to think about is that this is a remarkable development that we can use actually to solve some of our greatest challenges. The global health challenge, the global education challenge, the climate challenge, as well as the justice challenge. So we have at our fingertips a way of, in my view, over the next 10 years or so, of cracking some of these age-old difficulties. Of course, at the same time, there are problems and issues, and this is our fundamental challenge. That's why I say in the book that saving humanity with and from AI is the defining challenge of our generation.
Now, I hate to say that history goes in cycles, because it doesn't, but the ripples always felt through. But I'm continually casting my mind back to the 20s and 30s, not about AI, but a few other political situations. But if you look at the literature and the thoughts of the 20s and 30s, you're looking at The Machine Stops, Brave New World, Huxley's, where what would happen is that the machines, not AI, but the machines would take over, allowing the population more time to become, I'm not going to get into genetics now, but, supermen and superwomen who had the time to not do the legwork and therefore would be able to think about the deeper questions of life. And AI is a way of doing the legwork, the amazing legwork, the time-consuming legwork that's for things like science projects, for solving, looking for cures for cancer, looking for cures for this and that and the other.
There is a view, and this is the view you've just expressed, that what will happen is that humans won't work anymore in the conventional way and we'll be released to fulfill ourselves in other ways. And lots of people say, well, if you don't have a job, you don't have a source of meaning in your life. Not sure I agree with that. But what I wanted to impress on listeners is that the AI community itself doesn't speak with a single voice on the future of AI. And in the book, and I won't go into massive detail here, but there are six different views about how all of this might end up. Just to give you a very quick summary, some say it's all hype and that the bubble will burst and the systems actually will never be reliable. Others say, well, you've got things like ChatGPT today. It's not entirely reliable, but it will become reliable and will integrate it with our lives. But AI won't go that much further than that. The third group of people look to something called AGI, and this is the central debate for many of us in AI. AGI stands for Artificial General Intelligence, and these are basically systems that can do anything that we as humans can do in terms of our intellectual cognitive tasks. So the idea here is the system is actually performing at human level or higher. You can go beyond that, though, to what's called superintelligence. Why would the system simply stop at human level? Why won't they self-improve and become unfathomably more capable than us? Then you've got what's called the idea of the singularity. Some people will call it transhumanism, where biological organic humans merge with digital technology. And the final thought, which is the scariest of all, is what I call the AI evolution hypothesis. Many cosmologists think this. They'd say, well, look, hang on. The universe is 13.8 billion years old. Humans have been around a couple of 100,000 years, a mere blink in cosmic terms. Surely the only contribution that humanity will ever make to the universe will be to create this superior intelligence that will go out and populate the universe, but in due course replace us. So there are the six different views, and some are far more extreme than others. I don't think we need to worry too much about the final three over the next few years. The big one, though, is AGI. And the key question of my book is, what if AGI? What would our societies be like if we had machines that were performing at the level of us, that could do everything a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher could do? What would our society be like if art and music and literature could be created at human level or higher? That's the question I think we should be asking ourselves.
But sir, in a hand up from the back, the thing is, though, that's all well and fine, but you're looking at things from, if you like, a scientific or a logical perspective, and but art, science, music, all the human evolution and advances have a human factor built into it, be it the discovery of DNA, be it this, the happy accidents that lead to not only, I'm not saying that, we're going to get people creating Picassos in their spare time, but all scientific advancement has come through the unexpected. And therefore, can you replicate, the unpredictability of humanity in an AI where, obviously AI is programmed, he says as a layman, that it won't have the unpredictability of humanity programmed in?
It's fascinating because people often say, well, of course, these machines can only rely on past data, but I wonder what we as humans rely on. We certainly don't rely on data from the future. What it is that will bring about new configurations of thoughts or ideas, whether or not machines will be able to generate, for example, Einsteinian insight, we don't yet know. My instinct is that they will do. But what we're already seeing is that if you gather together oceans of past data, then these machines can certainly come up with stuff that humans have never thought of before.
What's our entry level then as the perplexed? I mean, presumably ChatGTP is the one, and I have run into some absolutely made me, because maybe it's just my dark sense of humor, made me crack up because a lot of people, for example, if they go for jobs, I'm based in Marbella, there's an awful lot of real estate companies down here, and a lot of people have been sending off their CVs or their covering letters and running it through ChatGTP and coming out with these amazing letters to their prospective employers, and the employers have said yes, come in, and when they've actually sort of had to have a thought themselves and actually be in a face-to-face conversation, it all falls down. So is this the entry level for us then, ChatGTP, or has there been AI around but we haven't noticed it, or we haven't regarded it as AI when your basic computer systems were perhaps doing the AI job without us knowing it?
You can date AI, I think, to about 1950, and there were some remarkable systems over the years. And interestingly, in the early years, major breakthroughs came every 5 to 10 years. They're now coming every 6 to 12 months. But the big breakthrough that I think brought this technology into our homes and into our minds was indeed ChatGPT being launched in late November 2022. And a couple of things about it. One was how simple it is to communicate with it. It's very human-like. It mimics human conversation and interaction. You don't need to be able to write code to use these systems. So that was amazing. And secondly, it just produces remarkable stuff, whether it be poems or music or videos, or it can even write code. And what I encourage everyone to do is to have a go, to use the systems. It's massively accessible. Use it with your kids as well. Get them used to the idea that we will, and they will have remarkable knowledge resources available at their fingertips. So the immediate task, I think, is to become more comfortable with the technology and more familiar with it. The longer term task is far harder, and that's for our governments and for our businesses and for our leaders around the world to be thinking through and planning for these systems when they become far more advanced.
But the problem with that is that all legislation, all governments, which are at the moment pretty much reactive rather than proactive, and legislation moves at a pace that is best described as glacial. So by the time you put in the legislation need to stop, you know, in a very worst case, you know, deep fake pornography, for example, that legislation is already, you know, the technology's already moved on. You've put this boundary in, but the AI systems are now sort of 300 virtual kilometers down the road.
Bang on. People, lawyers who've specialized in technology for the last 50 years have always complained that the law runs about 10 years behind the technology. We can't have this. It fascinates me because everyone's talking about legislating and introducing regulation for AI. The bigger challenge is to make sure that our legislative processes and our processes for creating regulation are sufficiently rapid and agile that we can respond to these technologies as they emerge. We cannot be having several years of debate. But that's why I say we should be thinking, what if AGI? We should be stretching our policymaking and our ethics now and trying to think now, how would we respond if these technologies were terribly advanced?
So what we really need is an AGI to look at AI and to predict where it's going to go. And that's and for those who are on their second bowl of cornflakes, that's quite a mind-blowing concept, Richard.
Yeah, I'm sorry to ruin everyone's breakfast, particularly with the AI evolution hypothesis. No, it's absolutely right, though, and you say it with a smile, that we will be using AGI to sort these problems. But this is one of the features of the age in which we live, that the systems we develop will themselves be involved in the development of the next generation of systems. So I say the same in law. We've got to be using this technology to create regulations, to create legislation. We have to rethink our legal processes, some of our legal concepts as well. What about legal personality? Do we treat these machines as responsible for their activities? What about intellectual property? We hear a lot about copyright law and the concerns of creative artists. The copyright law was developed hundreds of years ago in light of the printing press. We have to, it seems to me, in law and elsewhere, upgrade many of our concepts and our common ideas.
But as somebody who's you know, sits in a room, talks to himself for a living, and then plays music to himself for a living, one of the things is, the whole thing with copyright law is, if you go down that particular path, and I've had a wry smile on my face, Richard, as people are saying, oh, well, AI is going to, take the, and they've been posting on their social media saying, as an artist, I don't want AI taking my, you know, stealing my stuff. But then again, if you apply that, you could go all the way back to Robert Johnson, the Blues, and every song from the Rolling Stones, the Who, whoever wrote, is actually breaking copyright. That is just, you know, every artist, every writer is inspired by a previous writer. So, and the same with, you know, with others of the art. So you kind of are hiding to nothing on that one.
I think you're right. We're a little precious about our creations. The idea that any of my books simply came from my head and no other place is fanciful. We might like to think that. But if we accept that what it is we do when we create is build on the ideas and the creations of others, that somewhat dilutes the argument. As a more general point, though, I'm worried less about these systems learning, for example, from all my writings, and more about the idea that they might reproduce them in full. And that, I think, is a legitimate concern, that people who write books don't want these books freely available and copyable. But the idea that we might, as people in creative industries, create content that can be learned from by these systems, and in turn to create better entertainment systems and improved culture, or extending our conceptions of culture. I think this is exciting. So I talk in the book about what I call not us thinking. And not us thinking is really where every individual profession or occupational group has special pleading about why AI doesn't apply to their work and so forth. But we need to shake our heads a little and I think think deeply about not so much the threats to the current producers, but how this might improve the lives of the recipients.
Do you think AI needs a PR spin? Because I'm just thinking about we need an AI story that doesn't involve the aforementioned, you know, Terminator 2 mythology, but, you know, the fantastic number crunching you do, the idea that it can predict or help mitigate circumstances for natural disasters, health crises, you know, drought in Africa. I mean, these are all things that AI can get deeply involved with. Cut the legwork. The logistics, for example, could be the time can be shelved in terms of response or future planning. And something like that would go, you know, okay, let's not take a think of AI as something to be afraid of, but as something to embrace as an aid and a tool. And yes, you can go off fancifully saying we're all going to be replaced by robots, but actually this is a tool that we can use like any other tool if we use it with safeguards.
I think we need more balanced coverage. You're right that so much of what's said on social media and elsewhere is really about the existential threats and the potential Armageddon situations. What we need to do is build up our case studies and make them popular, case studies of how this is helping in medicine, how this is reducing the cost of government bureaucracy, how this is helping educating people around the world, how it's coming up with ideas to crack climate change. And we need coverage of these issues too. But as I said earlier, I think we should neither be too enthusiastically for nor too depressingly against. The challenge is to get the balance right. We're creating this remarkable capability that we can use for great good, but might also bring great harm. And we need, as parents, as legislators, as leaders, to think through the implications of this remarkable development.
What are you hoping that people are going to take and discover from your book, Richard?
What I want is a better level of conversation, not just in homes, but in governments and in businesses. It's quite interesting when you write a book, most people say to you, what are you writing a book about? And you tell them, they'll say, oh, tell me more about the book. When you tell them you're writing a book on AI, they tell you what they think about AI, which is a rather bizarre response. In a way, it's good that people are engaged, but I think they come to conversations with a whole set of preconceptions. So to some extent, I'm trying to challenge these preconceptions, trying to, I suppose, zoom out and give people a better and clearer understanding of the potential and limitations of the technology.
Final question, Richard. How close, and all for all Hitchhikers fans in the world, how close are we to deep thought and the answer to the life, the universe and everything?
We're a few months away.
Brilliant. The book is called How to Think About AI. It's by Professor Richard Susskind, who speaks to you today. If people want to, you can order it, by the way, and I urge that you do via our own virtual bookstore. Just click on the photo of the front cover and it will be winging its way to you. If people want to follow you online to check out that you're not a deep fake, where's the best place to engage with you, Richard?
I prefer LinkedIn to X. I find a more affable sort of conversation. So that's the best way to get hold of me. And again, we have some pretty good debates on there. I can't always respond to all queries and observations. I tend to take the shortcut by saying, have a read of my book. But nonetheless, that's the best place to meet me.
This book is called How to Think About AI. It's by Professor, A Guide for the Perplexed. I'm a little less perplexed. Listeners, I urge you to go and order it today. It's by Richard Susskind. Richard, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Great. Likewise. Anytime. I hope we can pick up on further issues at a future moment.
I look forward to it immensely.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.